This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and online at kexp.org. My guest this morning is Richard Conlon, president of the Seattle City Council and chair of the council's Regional Development and Sustainability Committee. Richard Conlon is here today to give us an update on Seattle's Local Food Action Initiative, which was adopted by the city in April of 2008. Welcome. It's good to have you back on the sustainability segment.
Absolutely. It's great to be here.
Would you like to begin by reminding us of the goal of Seattle's Local Food Action Initiative?
Sure. Well, the goal is to make sure that we can provide healthy local food to all of our populations. So it's about supporting local agriculture. It's about developing food resources here in the city. And it's also about making sure that people have enough food to eat and food that's good for them.
Would you like to expand on how promoting local food benefits the city of Seattle?
Well, there's a whole lot of ways in which it benefits us. Insofar as we are encouraging people to be more healthy, it's something that is part of our mission as a city. It also does a lot of things to improve the environment. Insofar as people are using local food, that's something that reduces greenhouse gas emissions, it provides for a better and healthier environment, protects and encourages our farmland production around us. And even beyond that, it also is an important part of creating community in the city. One of the things that is traditional in America, and I suppose this is probably true in every human society, is that food is one of the ways in which we come together and get to know our neighbors, get to talk to each other, build relationships, and build strong communities. And that's very important. That's really the goal of city government, is to have communities that really work for people.
Would you give an overview of what the Local Food Action Initiative proposes?
Well, there's a whole lot of different things. And basically what we're talking about is increasing food production in the city. And that's both by encouraging more community gardening and also by providing more opportunities for people to have their own food grown in their own homes or in their own residences, associated with their own residences. So that's one part of it. The second part of it is getting more local food sourced and into the city. And that means protecting farmland around the city, developing more local sources of food, and also protecting our farmers' markets and making sure that those farmers' markets have spaces that they can stay in and they'll be able to occupy. A third part of it is promoting healthy and nutritional food in places in the city where it's not very readily available. And that includes things like working on getting corner stores to carry more fresh vegetables, finding other ways in which to get nutrition and active living education out to people in the community. So those are some of the main things that we're trying to do with it.
Before we go into more detail, would you give a brief overview of the steps taken to implement the Local Food Action Initiative since it was adopted in 2008?
There's been a lot that's happened. One of the great things that happened was the passage of the Parks Levy in the fall of 2008, and we put in there $2 million for the development of additional community gardens, pea patch plots. Our goal is to reduce the waiting list to zero. We don't know if we're going to be able to do that, but we're going to do our best to do it. And in using that money, one of the things that we're going to be concentrating on is taking existing city property or other publicly owned property and using the money to develop the gardens rather than necessarily buying land, which can be pretty expensive. So we believe the properties that were identified for implementation in 2009-2010 will support an additional 500 community garden plots, increasing by about 20% the number that we have. And we hope to create at least another 500 with the remainder of the money. So that's one major step forward. A second step that we took was to change the ordinances that regulate farmers' markets. We reduced the permit fees by about 90% for farmers' markets that have to locate in the right-of-way. We facilitated and made it easier for farmers' markets to find alternative locations on city land if they can no longer occupy private land that most of them are on in parking lots and things of that nature. So that was a second step. We also opened new farmers markets. We have a new farmers market in South Park. It's kind of an interesting farmers market that's primarily mobile food vendors. We have a new farmers market location on Queen Anne, on a market that was threatened to be closed, and we were able to find them a new location. We have new farmers markets in several other places around the city, and this is something that we're, again, trying to encourage. And one of my pet projects, we have a farmers market on the plaza at City Hall. And that is sponsored by the Pike Place Market. It turned out to be extraordinarily successful, and the farmers were clamoring to get in, and there's so many people around there who want to get fresh, healthy food. So those are some examples of the things that we're doing to implement. There's other things that we're doing in terms of changing regulations for the city. One of the issues that came up was, can people plant food in the planting strips in front of their houses? The Department of Transportation tended to discourage it, and they asked people to apply for permits if they're going to plant food. We got that regulation clarified. Now you only have to get a permit if you're going to put a structure in there, like a raised bed, and the permit is free. And they'll basically advise you on anything that you need to know in terms of how to make sure that you avoid blocking sight lines and handicapped access and things of that nature. Also, our Parks Department is really embracing the Local Food Action Initiative. They are getting more healthy food into community centers. They're changing out what's happening in the vending machines in community centers and in other places where they have it. And they're starting pilot gardens to teach people how to grow food at a lot of the community centers. So I could go on, but there's just a tremendous number of things happening, and it's great to see the ferment all around the community that's taking place in this.
You mentioned the farmers markets. What is being planned for the future for the farmers markets?
Well, we'd like to see them continue and grow and expand. Most of the farmers markets in Seattle are really thriving. The key thing we needed to make sure they had was to provide security so that if they lose their sites, which in many cases they are because they're located in the middle of fairly dense urban areas, that they can have access to right-of-way. And that's what we did with the Queen Anne Farmers Market. And by reducing the permit fees and the other fees that they would have to pay by, as I said, up to about 90%, we think we can provide more security for them.
What progress has been made in developing urban agriculture and actually growing food in the city? You alluded a bit to that earlier, but would you say more?
Sure. Well, there's really several different steps that we're taking. As I said, one is to encourage the community gardens, and we talked about getting more pea patches in place. And another is to provide more opportunities and encouragement for people to grow food on their own property. And there's a third stage. And the third stage, we're actually looking at providing urban agriculture. And what we're actually looking at is we now have a grant from the federal government that's going to provide the opportunity for us to actually acquire farmland in southeast Seattle and develop an urban farm. We have been looking at another possible location in North Seattle where we can have an urban farm. We're changing the zoning regulations to provide that agricultural use becomes a permitted use in many different areas around the city. And we're also going to be working to encourage people to learn skills and partner with rural areas so that we can get more farms in rural areas supported and working with people in the city. To give you an example of that, there's a wonderful program in the central neighborhood called Clean Greens, which is sponsored by one of the churches, New Hope Baptist Church, in the central area. And Clean Greens has actually leased some land out in the Snoqualmie Valley. They're growing greens that are culturally appropriate for people who are in the central area, particularly in the Black community, who really have greens that they've sort of have been traditional part of their cooking and culture and are not necessarily easy to acquire, particularly ones that are grown organically and grown locally. And they're also teaching people, and particularly taking teenagers out from the area and teaching them how to get involved in agriculture and growing food. It's potentially a skill that could be employable. It's also a skill that people could use just as part of their own homes.
You mentioned the two urban farms, one in the south and one in the north in Seattle. Who would be running those farms?
Well, we currently have an existing farm in South Seattle, which is called Mara Farms, and that's located in South Park. And that's actually operated by Seattle Youth Garden Works, which is a nonprofit organization that actually does work with homeless youth to give them gardening and agricultural skills. And then most of the produce that they produce is sold at farmers markets or provided to food banks. We'll have a similar arrangement for the new farms that are being developed where a nonprofit organization would actually be managing and operating them.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Richard Conlon, president of the Seattle City Council. The topic is progress made on the City of Seattle's Local Food Action Initiative. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. Would you say more about the Pea Patch program and the details of what's going to be done there?
Well, we're putting together a package of ways in which to get more land available. So one of the things we did was we did a survey of all of the public property that might potentially be suitable for peat patches to be developed. And it turns out there's actually quite a lot of public land that is not particularly used right now. And we're now winnowing through that list to identify ones that are particularly suitable for peat patches. Some of them might be in parks. Some of them might be on unused street right-of-way, for example, right-of-way that's on steep slopes. We've already got some peat patches that are on those kinds of property. we may be able to expand more of it. And there may be other unused land, for example, land that's primarily used for utility purposes. The land under the transmission towers in Beacon Hill, there are three pea patches in there, and we may have some opportunities for additional ones there. So those are the kind of things we're doing to expand opportunities for pea patches. We are also working on experiments to change the regulations for pea patches to allow people who might want to do some market gardening in pea patches to be able to do it. Again, there's a number of ethnic communities in southeast Seattle that traditionally have had market gardens as part of their culture. And we've had some that have developed it. And the regulations in the past really didn't allow people to sell food that they had grown in pea patches. And we want to carefully change that, change it not in such a way to make all pea patches ones where people grow food to sell, because they're really more for people's own consumption and for giving away and for producing food for food banks, but to have that element that can be possible in some cases.
What do you see as the timeline for making that particular change?
Well, we've already piloted it, actually, and we're looking at, are there regulatory changes that we need to do in order to make sure that the pilot can actually be replicated and continued?
You mentioned the planting of vegetables and other items in planting strips. To what extent have citizens taken advantage of the new open regulations in regard to that?
Well, we don't have any data. I mean, we haven't been collecting statistics on it, but we have a tremendous number of anecdotes, and the anecdotes are basically telling us that lots and lots of people are taking advantage of it, and we're seeing much more food being grown out in the planting strips, which, by the way, has an interesting implication from a community standpoint, because when you're actually out gardening in the front of your house rather than the back of your house, people see what you're doing, they'll stop, they'll talk to you. One of my friends who told me, I never knew so many of my neighbors until I started planting in my planting strip, and now I know everybody in the neighborhood.
What is being done to help areas that are currently underserved by grocery stores?
We have a pilot project in the Delridge neighborhood, and Delridge neighborhood is a really interesting community. There it's designated as an urban village, but it's a very unusual urban village in that there is not a single center. Most of our urban villages have a single commercial center that they're being developed around. In Delridge, there are three nodes that have some commercial development, and none of them are really large enough to support a commercial grocery store. For many years, the people in Delridge have been trying to get a commercial grocery store to locate there, and the grocery store companies look at it and say, we just don't think there's a big enough market close enough for us to be able to do that. But there are 14 convenience stores in the Delridge neighborhood. And so instead of kind of waiting and hoping for a grocery store to come in that would have a full line of produce, with this grant that we've gotten from the federal government, Solid Ground and the Delridge Neighborhoods Development Association are working on a program to get these small stores to actually carry produce. Part of that is by just providing education and information about how relatively easy it is, where people can get produce. And part of it is by marketing in the community, by encouraging people to go to those stores and buy the produce. And part of it is looking at, so what will you need to make produce workable? Do you need refrigeration? What are the kind of things that would actually be helpful for people? So it's a pilot project. We hope that it's going to be successful and may be able to be spread in other areas around the city. We don't have as many what are called food deserts, that is areas where it's really hard to find good groceries, as many cities around the country. But we do have a few, and we want to really try and encourage those to actually have more fresh fruits and vegetables available in them.
Would you highlight the policy changes made by the city that have made development of a local food system easier? You've mentioned several of them already.
Well, I think that a lot of them have to do, as I said, with some of the changes in the way in which we either encourage or don't encourage people to grow food on their own. And part of it has to do with just providing more opportunities with the city's land. We're looking at other policy changes. We have a package of land use code amendments that we expect to come back to the City Council in April. And those land use code amendments will provide for things such as a definition of urban agriculture, urban farm, and allowing it to happen, adding a definition for community garden to the land use code, allow people in residential zones to grow and sell unprocessed produce on their property, allow existing urban horse farms to continue to operate. We actually have two horse farms in the city of Seattle within city limits. We want to make sure that they can continue to operate and that they actually have a legal definition and designation as agricultural land. So those are some of the things that we might be changing in those regulations. Another program that we are working on with King County is to provide for a transfer of development rights that would protect farmland in rural King County. Right now, there's some farmland that's protected because the county has either purchased it or purchased the development rights. But even in areas that are designated rural and agricultural, it's still possible for farmers to kind of give up and say, I'm just going to sell off my land, and they can sell it in 5-acre lots, and people can build mansions on it. And rather than having that happen, we can buy the development rights from those properties, and we can then transfer those development rights into the city. And the development rights can then be resold to developers to allow them to achieve the height and density that's permitted in the zones that they might be developing in. We've identified several hundred development rights in rural King County that potentially could be available to be bought. We are working with King County to negotiate an agreement on how that would be done, and we'd like to see that move forward this year. The ones that we've identified as our highest priority are the ones that supply produce to Seattle's farmers markets.
Would you say more about the $300,000 community food grant received from the U.S. Department of Agriculture and how it's being used?
That was one of the most interesting things that we were able to do last year as part of the development of the Local Food Action Initiative. We went to D.C. and told them about the Local Food Action Initiative. I happened to be in D.C. and I went and met with the Agricultural Department and told them about it. And they got really excited and said, we'd love to have you apply for this grant. We did, and they awarded us $300,000. And none of it is going actually to city programs. All of it is going to community-based organizations. So it's supporting the development of the urban farm in southeast Seattle. It's supporting the Delridge program to try and get fresh produce into corner stores. There's a number of other things that it's going to be supporting in terms of providing better hunger, education and nutrition, and healthier foods. It's targeted at low-income populations and primarily in the Delridge area, southwest and southeast Seattle.
What additional steps are being taken to help low-income or disadvantaged communities in terms of food?
One of the things that we have worked with United Way on is to develop a coordinated strategy to tackle hunger in the city of Seattle. And actually, United Way is going beyond the city. We're actually talking about in King County as a whole. In the city of Seattle, about 1 out of every 8 families has access to food bank in the last year. That's a pretty extraordinary number to think about. In addition to encouraging our food banks and providing them with resources and support and encouraging people to grow food in their community gardens and in their private gardens to donate to food banks, we're also trying to get people more access to food stamps, what used to be called food stamps. And they now have a different name for it, which I've misplaced at this point. But at any rate, many people, or the studies that we have show that about half the people who are eligible for food stamps are not receiving them. So we're trying to encourage people to actually sign up, give them additional opportunities for assistance, and that's kind of the first step in making sure that people do have resources and supplies of food that they really need. Ultimately, we have to tackle hunger and malnutrition together. We have to tackle it as a community, and it's really about providing people the opportunities they need to get employment and housing and food in ways that they can be part of the community.
You are listening to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Richard Conlon, president of the Seattle City Council. The topic is progress made on the City of Seattle's Local Food Action Initiative. Would you speak now about the development of a food policy council?
Yes, this is a very exciting part of the next stage of the Local Food Action Initiative. There has been an acting food policy council in Seattle, which was under the auspices of Washington State University Cooperative Extension with the cooperation of the health department and some folks from the University of Washington and other people in the community. And this acting food policy council was actually one of the sources for developing the Local Food Action Initiative. It hasn't had a strong institutional base, particularly with cooperative extension facing budget cuts. It's been very difficult for them to provide support for the Food Policy Council. In fact, they've had to phase it out. And the Food Policy Council hasn't had an official standing in the community. So that's one of the reasons they've called themselves the Acting Food Policy Council. Well, we've been working to try and provide a home and a standing and a status for a Food Policy Council for quite some time. And we now have, on January 28th, the Puget Sound Regional Council, which is the organization that represents does planning work for the 4 counties in the Puget Sound region, King, Pierce, Snohomish, and Kitsap, has decided that it will sponsor a regional food policy council as an advisory council, official advisory council to the Puget Sound Regional Council. That was a great decision on their part. I think it really helps, and it's great to have it regional because that way we represent not only the urban consumers and producers, but of course the rural consumers and producers, and gives us more chance to develop partnerships between urban and rural areas. So that will be developed over the next several months. The Acting Food Policy Council will be a transitional council towards the establishment of the permanent one. And we are also going to be seeking funding for it. The federal government is interested in supporting food policy councils around the country, and they will have a grant opportunity that's coming up very shortly, and we hope to be able to take advantage of that.
What do you see as the key topics for the Food Policy Council?
Well, food policy councils are basically just what they sound like. They are councils of people who bring together different interests in the food arena, like producers and consumers, distributors, health experts, agricultural experts, all of those types of people, in order to formulate policies that will promote healthier and better local food. So it's a policy forum, and we can see them as providing ideas for legislation that could be done at both the state and local level, providing those connections and marketing ideas for people to connect rural and urban areas, all kinds of things like that. It's something that is very important part of food strategies in the cities that currently have them.
How well have the food policy councils worked in the cities that have adopted them?
There are a dozen or several dozen cities that have food policy councils now. And I think they've been very instrumental in getting people more involved in the food system and getting the food system better adapted to the needs of people.
What kind of response are you getting from the community to the Local Food Action Initiative?
Lots of enthusiasm. People really see it as something that touches them very close to home. It's something that definitely reflects people's need for something that is oriented towards sustainability, something that builds community, something that promotes health. People like it, and, you know, people like to eat, so it's very logical that food is something that really grabs their attention. So we found widespread support all over the community. There's a tremendous number of organizations and activists and nonprofit groups that are working with us on it, and we expect things to get even more intense and more interesting as we move into 2010. And I'm pleased to be able to say that this week, Mayor Mike McGinn and I had the chance to do a news release highlighting the declaration of 2010 as the year of urban agriculture. We're doing that in order to emphasize that 2010 is a chance to take the Local Food Action Initiative to the next level of delivery and performance and visibility. We're going to try and implement a whole lot of additional projects, programs, ideas, and legislation that will promote local food. And we're going to get lots of organizations and people involved in it. So 2010, the year of urban agriculture.
What do you consider the greatest successes so far in implementing the Local Food Action Initiative?
I think the greatest success has been really finding groups of activists all around the city who have been thinking and working on food issues and trying to develop this kind of network and get the support that they need in order to really move into a larger arena, and making the linkages between them and giving them the policy and programmatic tools and in some cases even the funding that allows their programs to really flourish. So that's been what's terrific about it. I mean, the policy changes have been neat. It's been fun to do those. But what's really exciting about it is how much this has been a community grassroots kind of effort and how we've been able to help those community organizations and grassroots folks be able to actually realize the dreams and aspirations that they have.
What do you consider the greatest challenges in implementing the Local Food Action Initiative so far?
Well, you know, growing food in an urban area is still a new idea to a lot of people. So I think the biggest challenge is keeping the momentum going, keeping the visibility out in the community, making sure that we have the resources to be able to sustain the effort as it goes forward. You know, in most social change, you have a group of people who are kind of the innovators and the pioneers who are out there in front, and those people were just being able to say, great, we're freeing you to do what you can do and what you want to do. And then you've got the next group of people that you call the sort of early adopters, who are the people who really set the pattern for how a social change is taking place. And now we've got to really reach out to the big group of people that are kind of in the middle, who are interested in food, local food, who have some ideas about it and want to think about it, but who aren't yet really fully bought into the kind of concepts that we're talking about. I think we can do that. I think it's something that is just resonates really well with people in the city, but we have to be able to take ourselves to scale in order to be able to really accomplish our goals.
What will be the specific focus during 2010 in terms of the Local Food Action Initiative?
Well, the specific focus through the year of urban agriculture is to promote this urban agricultural efforts and to increase community access to locally grown food. And again, there'll be some regulatory work and some work that's within the kind of dry aspects of the city. But a lot of it is really getting out and doing community organizing and giving people the hands-on skills that are going to help them grow food.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
You know, this is one of the most interesting and exciting and fun ways in which you can get involved in social change, and in social change that really is addressing the core issues of our time. People's health is extraordinarily important, and America has suffered from the fact that our food system has not been sustaining our health in the way that it should be. Our environment has suffered. Our economy has suffered. Our healthcare system has suffered. We have an opportunity to really change a lot of those things by implementing a new attitude towards food. And the Year of Urban Agriculture and the Local Food Action Initiative is really about bringing about that kind of community effort and helping people to realize the sorts of aspirations that they have for a healthier and better relationship with themselves, their community, and the environment.
Well, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you very much, Diane. It's been great to be here.
You have just been listening to Richard Conlon, president of the Seattle City Council, speak about the Year of Urban Agriculture and the Local Food Action Initiative. For more information, check on the web at www.cityofseattle.gov/urban-agriculture. Again, that's cityofseattle.gov/urban-agriculture. The sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the streaming archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. In addition, selected sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on podcasting, and scroll down to Mind Over Matters sustainability segment. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on 90.3 FM and KEXP.org.